Hi, listeners. This is the Hot Fossils and Rebel Matters show. Welcome again if you are a returning listener, and I hope you are a returning listener. And welcome for the first time if you're a new listener. I hope you enjoy the show today. I invite you to also check out some of the other ones at the show's website. That's at hotfrm.blogmatrix.com. I'm Ninja, and I'm your host. I'm here to share with you observations, commentary, reviews, interviews, performance pieces, and sometimes my ramblings. This show is sponsored by The Riot Group. That's W-R-Y-I-T. A little play on words that is supposed to remind me not to take myself too seriously in this life, whatever the circumstances. Today I'm going to share with you a review of The Producers. Special K and I saw it a few days ago with my aunt, and we had a discussion about it in the car yesterday. So here it is, straight from the car to you, to your ears. Here's our thoughts on The Producers.
I'd been looking forward to seeing The Producers for a number of months. In fact, I think about a year, maybe 2 years ago, it actually came to Toronto as a stage play. I don't know who was in it. It was probably a bunch of unknowns, probably a bunch of local actors. But the run wasn't very long. Special K, do you remember how long the run was in Toronto?
Yeah, I think it was about 2 months.
Now, that's not very long. So I guess it wasn't, and then go over big?
I'm not really sure. I can't remember, actually.
Well, I had planned to take my aunt because she's into, you know, Mel Brooks kind of comedy, but she was sick at the time, so she didn't want to go. Anyway, I guess the movie's come out, and I called my aunt up, and I said, let's go see the movie. I think that would be cool, and she was all for it. And my aunt actually enjoyed The Producers. We went to see it yesterday, but I didn't. I mean, I really didn't feel that it translated well. Having known what stage and theater is like, I know when something doesn't translate well to this big screen, and I have a number of criticisms about that. But Special K has her own criticisms, which I'm going to let her share with you.
Well, I guess essentially for me, it was like watching a Broadway play on film. As a Broadway play. So I'm not really sure why they made a movie.
Well, I think they made a movie to secure their legacy, is what I think. I mean, you know, Mel Brooks' thing is movies. He's made a lot of movies. I guess he's made a lot of stage plays as well. He certainly is prolific when it comes to that.
Well, correct. But The Producers was a movie originally, made into a stage play. And the play is now on film. So it's sort of come full circle. Did we need another movie? Probably not. They immortalized the roles of, or the characters Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane played, but that's about it. I felt like I was watching Broadway, not a movie.
Yeah, I guess I was really excited because I had heard that Nathan Lane was spectacular in his role. You know what? I thought the whole thing was completely and utterly over the top. Yes, they were all very good actors. I really did enjoy the acting. I thought it was really tight. But you want to know something that I thought was really irritating, Special K? And that was all the freaking continuity errors. I could not believe how many continuity errors there were in the movie. Did you notice them?
Certainly did. In fact, I think I counted 10 within the first 15 minutes of the film, and I thought, what's going on here? How stupid do they think we are?
I mean, at one point, Leopold Bloom's briefcase is on the desk, and he turns away for a moment, then he goes back to the desk, and lo and behold, the briefcase is no longer there. He's covered in water, because I guess, the other fellow threw water at him to calm him down. And then a few seconds later, his shirt is dry, and then it's wet again, that sort of thing. Well, do you remember what some of the other continuity errors were?
Glasses on, glasses off.
That's a bad one.
Their heads would be turned in the opposite direction that you saw them in, so they're speaking, cut to the other character, cut back, and their head's going the other way.
Oh yeah, and there's also a scene where, what was his name, Bialystok? Bialystok's hair was a mess. Actually, it was a very funny scene. I did quite enjoy it. But when you turn to look at him the next time after his hair was a mess, it was beautifully combed down. And it really, you know, it was a continuity error because there wasn't time for him to comb his hair. They should have just left it messy anyway because the scene wasn't over.
Agreed.
Anyway, it wasn't really, you know... For me, the era of the musical or the era of, you know, taking Broadway plays and putting them on the big screen is over. And that's part of the reason why I don't want to see Rent. I'm like really nervous to see Rent.
Well, I think it is possible. I mean, Chicago, for me, Chicago was a good adaptation because it stayed true to the stage play or the musical stage, but at the same time it sort of utilized some things that you can do in a movie that you can't do on screen, whereas the producers, to me, they didn't. They just took their sets and filmed it.
Yeah, I really did feel like I was watching stage sets, like in a big way. And I was, you know, even though I just found everything really overdone, from Nathan Lane's over-the-top screaming and sputtering to Matthew Broderick's whining and fearfulness and mousiness to the gay couple. I mean, granted, it was really well done, very tight, but, you know, it was completely, utterly over the top. I don't know, at a certain point I was thinking, when is this going to be over? Like, I was waiting for it to get good. I was waiting for it to really be funny. I was waiting for it to really impress me. And maybe I would have been more impressed if I'd seen the Broadway play itself.
Yeah, I actually won't go see the play now. I mean, I've seen it, the story. The story itself, probably... within the context of the story, you've got every cliche that you could ever imagine. And it gets tiring, and I guess that's a Mel Brooksism, but after a while, it starts to grate on your nerves.
Well, what cliches do you mean, Special K?
Oh, the plaid shirt dyke. The over-the-top gaze.
Yeah.
It goes on and on.
Yeah.
Oh, and all the sexual innuendo and... Yeah, but that's, you know, that's the fun of a musical comedy, though, I think.
I suppose. I find it a bit puerile, though.
Well, you know what I would like to see? I'd like to see the original producers. When was that made?
I think it was 1968.
Okay. Well,
Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder, I think, were the two.
Oh, well, now those are two great comic actors, Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. Then I'd like to see the original then. Let's try and get hold of that, and then we can report on that one in comparison. I guess the bottom line is I just didn't feel connected to this movie. Anyway, having said that, my aunt completely loved it, and she was rolling in the aisles with laughter at certain points. So, you know, I guess we did what we were supposed to do. We gave my aunt an enjoyable afternoon at the theater. What do you think, Special K?
Yes.
Well, that was our take on The Producers. Over the last couple of weeks, the subject of labels has come up in my circle of friends. There are those of you who might not be familiar with that kind of discussion, since it often does not come up in non-queer contexts. Queers, often those just coming out, have a tendency, often a very strong tendency, to reject labels about themselves. Queers, when we first come out, have this inclination to say they cannot be pinned down, cannot be labeled, cannot be defined. I see this as somewhat of a defense mechanism in the sense that we want to remain undefined. There's a kind of self-deception going on here. There's a fiction that we tell ourselves, and this is if we don't label ourselves, then no one else can pin us down and label us either. And thereby we can avoid the pain of bigotry, prejudice, and homophobia. Well, that's simply not true, because while you yourself may decide not to label or define yourself, believe me, the rest of society is going to do it for you. So it doesn't really matter what you call yourself or how you define yourself. People will need to define you on your behalf, especially if you will not do it yourself. It's been my experience that when I meet someone newly coming out, there's often a tendency to define themselves as bisexual or even no particular sexuality, at least until they decide or figure out one way or the other whether they are gay or straight. To be fair, some queers continue to consider themselves as bisexual, and they do take that on as their label. But as I have said before, if you don't label yourself, someone is gladly going to do it for you. And you will not avoid bigotry and prejudice and definition by the society at large, no matter what you do. So another aspect of labeling, well, let's see, labeling yourself makes a political statement. At least if you decide what you are on your own behalf, then you can declare that as a statement of your own identity. So forgive me if I'm saying political. That is a charged word for people. Regardless of how you define yourself, you are making a statement about your identity, and there's no way to get around that from my point of view. You can say, I refuse to be labeled. You can say, I'm not gay, I'm not straight, I'm not this, I'm not that. I won't be pinned down to monogamy or whatever form your brand of non-labeling might take. I think my main point is that however you define yourself or don't define yourself, you're making a statement about your identity. And whether you like it or not, that translates into a political statement. And this in turn affects how the rest of society accepts or doesn't accept those who do label themselves. And yes, some political statements appear to be more charged than others. To say that, for example, you're an ardent supporter of the Palestinian cause is an extremely political statement to make. On the other hand, it is no less political to take up the cause of peace in the Middle East and want a harmonious resolution to the conflict. To some, this may seem to be a statement of moderation, seemingly less radical than other solutions to the conflict, but it is no less political. Some people confuse statements of moderation or statements that are consistent with policies currently in place, or an unwillingness to even have an opinion about some matters, as being non-political. They aren't, in my view. Individuals may see such stances as a middle-of-the-road kind of views, safe views, views that keep them from questioning attitudes, laws, and policies that perhaps should be questioned, but keeps them apart from what they think are the political aspects of who they are. That, to me, is self-deception. All expressions of your identity are political and carry some weight. And I believe this. So what's another aspect to labeling? Defining yourself or aligning yourself to a particular definition that's been politically established is, I think, an important thing because it acknowledges that there have been activists and people who have gone before you who have set the stage for you to be able to say, I am this thing or I am that thing. I'm a lesbian, a gay man, a transgendered person. I think that acknowledgement is very important because those people worked for our rights. There would be no gay marriage in Canada today if there hadn't been activists working day and night to secure those rights. People accepting that gay marriage is a worthy political stance is how the legislation got made, via politics and the political process. This may seem like common sense and obvious, but many people resist the notion that the dance of human society is based in politics. Well, actually, I believe that everything is based in economics and that politics flows out of economics. But that's probably a subject for another podcast. There have been people working for decades so that we can now enjoy gay marriage. And I won't get into the insanity of Steve Harper, the leader of the Canadian Conservative Party, who thinks that it is a worthy part of his platform to reverse that decision. Though I personally am not an advocate of gay marriage for myself, I've never felt that it was important for me personally, but it is profoundly important in terms of the gay rights struggle. That's my take on what labels do for us in society. There are people who have worked hard for me so that I can say in many circles that I am a lesbian and have that accepted. There are people who have worked hard for me so that I can be represented on television, in drama, comedy, and reality television, for example. There are people who've worked hard for me so that I can be represented in my municipal, regional, and federal political system. There are people who have worked hard so that our particular medical issues can be considered in the healthcare system. And those people continue to work hard for me, and I owe much to them. That to me is very important. Then there is the aspect of self-identity, which may contradict all I've been saying about making a stand. Sexuality, just like gender, which is another topic I won't get into in this podcast, exists along a spectrum. Alfred Kinsey, in his famous Kinsey Report, established that sexuality exists along a continuum. And society, for most part, at least in principle, accepts that one's sexuality does exist somewhere on this spectrum. So, for example, I might, and many lesbians do, define themselves as lesbians. Women-identified women, women who want to share emotional and physical intimacy with other women. But these same women, from time to time, will sleep with men. The same goes for gay men. This does not make them suddenly straight, nor does it even make them potentially straight. This only makes them lesbians who sometimes have sex with men. But I can tell you that they will still define themselves as lesbians. It all has to do with how that woman ultimately defines herself personally. And I think it is important to establish that definition for yourself, because as I've said, if you don't do it, society will just do it for you, and others will make whatever assumptions they must in order to place you in their little boxes that make them feel comfortable. I can remember one New Year's Eve, a friend of mine was enjoying himself at a party we were both at. Now he's gay. And a straight woman expressed an interest in him, and well, he just went for it. He enjoyed his New Year's in this way he probably didn't expect, but he didn't mind it either. But there was no conflict for him. It never affected the definition of himself as a gay man. By the same token, there are many people who define themselves as straight who will from time to time have same gender sex or intimacies and never question that they are still straight. They will continue to define themselves as straight. I guess the question is whether you can personally accept that you can live with these sorts of contradictions in your life and whether you can reconcile them for yourself. And for many people, they can successfully reconcile that sexual aspect of themselves. And that's a good thing, because there's no reason why we should be ashamed of our desires. Question them, yes. Examine them, yes. But ultimately, accepting our desires can only make us stronger and more self-confident and make it easier for us to be tolerant of other people's desires. Homophobia exists when people cannot accept the spectrum of sexuality within themselves. So there is the political aspect and there is the personal aspect. And both of these aspects are important. But regardless of who I sleep with, it is very important to me to sing the praises of those who have gone before me, who've paved the way for me to have my current freedoms. Because essentially having freedom is what it boils down to for me. Now, here's Ninja's quote of the day for you. A little inspiration for you to take with you as you move through your day today. Perseverance is not a long race. It is many short races, one after another. That's attributed to Walter Elliott. Perhaps you can apply this to all of your New Year's resolutions this time around. Happy 2006, everyone. If you want to comment on this particular podcast, or if you want to comment on the show in general, please flip me an email. I welcome your feedback at hotfrm@gmail.com. That's hotfrm@gmail.com. Until I get to spend some time with you again, have a great day.